I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast.
The year is 1972. The album is The Golden Age of Comedy, Volume 1. The artist, various artists. And my guest, Joseph Scrimshaw, is back.
I am happy to be here.
For the fourth time?
I don't know. It's been so many. I don't know. It's third or fourth, for sure.
We did Sinatra. We did Maury Amsterdam. We did this one. And there's one more.
And we did one more.
The British one.
Not the 9 o'clock news.
Thank you. Yes.
This is four.
Yes. Yeah, this is four. This is good. So we did the same thing again. I bought a bunch of crap, and I let you pick one of the pieces of crap that I bought. You know what? I will say this. For this pile of crap that I bought, I've actually found some gems.
Yeah.
And for a compilation of basically old-time radio and TV clips, this is not the worst I've ever heard.
No.
Some of the quality's garbage. Some of the just terrible. But either way. So anyway, it's like the classics of comedy, like including like fucking Who's On First, which, boy, I really needed to hear that again.
Yeah. It's been too long, huh?
Holy crap. So why'd you pick this one out of all the garbage that I sent you?
Because I have a fascination with these kind of albums in particular. You know, we've talked about before, the other three times I've been here, about my vinyl hunting years.
Yeah.
So I was interested in Sinatra, interested in like Jerry Lewis, Marx Brothers, Laurel and Hardy, all that kind of era of, it's a long era, but but then I would come across albums like these. And sometimes they would be gold, actual gold, golden age of comedy. And sometimes they would be clearly like at the time they were produced, like 1972, of like, hey, people who actually listened to this stuff in the 40s and 50s who are dying. Here's just a piece of crap slapped together that your kids will buy for you because it's got Jack Benny on the cover.
It's absolutely true.
Sometimes they're great, and sometimes it's just like the bargain basement, like the modern version of like, here's a CD of the best of the 90s from a truck stop.
Oh, God, you're right. It is the same shit.
It's like, remember Soundgarden? Feels like the same as remember Jack Benny? Like, and there's something about coming across these artifacts, not being the age of people that it was intended for.
Sure.
All the people on the album are being revered, allegedly, and then so casually picked what their selections are. And sometimes it shows a little brilliant peek into, that person is brilliant. I do want to become a Jack Benny fan. And then sometimes you're just like, who the hell is, why would I ever want to hear that person speak again?
There's a number, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to start here. Is there anything on here that struck you as incredibly racist or insensitive? Because I didn't. Usually there's like one thing, and I feel like was there anything on here? Oh, there's a couple, maybe some accent work here and there.
There's definitely some accent work. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's definitely, and fascinatingly, the very first one is all accent, and we're at that point where French is still okay. Like I think we're starting to get a little sensitive to, hey, if we have caution about most people's accents, why is it still okay to just be like, je dis du, I'm French, you know? But it still is. We can squeak by. There's a stretch in about the middle of the album where almost every bit of comedy, regardless of whether it's successfully funny, is an irate man yelling at a woman. Whereas, like, and the one that was just a joke of, isn't it funny that he's not going to allow her to speak? That one was like, Even if it was successful at the time, I couldn't get past it to enjoy it. For what it was at the time.
Right.
Sorry. Did that,
my fucking phone won't stop ringing, Joseph Scrimshaw.
You're so damn popular.
Seriously. They want my money. They want my social security number first, but they want my money. This is a two-record set for anybody who's going to go hunt this down for, what did I get it for? $1. It's a two-record set. I love it. It's interesting too, because you had a gentleman on your podcast, and I'm sorry I don't remember his name, but he was obsessed with old time radio.
Yes.
And so this kind of stuff came up because, you know, old time radio was released on vinyl for a while, and it's the only way you could revisit.
Yeah, and I loved old time radio some of the comedians. I mostly love the mystery and the drama, but some of the comedians are great. And some of this is kind of like that old time radio style, and some of it, like you're saying, is just
move this to the next room. This is fucking pissing me off. Podcast.
Oh wow.
Jesus fucking Christ. Pardon my French.
No.
We're at the 425 minute mark. Two phone calls. Holy shit. Okay. And then it turned off my vibrate in the middle of it.
Oh really?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So it just
You were saying something intelligent.
Oh, no, no.
You liked old-time radio.
Yeah, so I'm really a fan of old-time radio, and sometimes these are great samples of what that great old-time radio comedy can be like with a live audience, where it's almost a little loose, where they're clearly reading scripts, but clearly also doing a little bit of improv around them. Mm-hmm. And other times it is just like, who's on first? The most generic, like, and it almost, they're yelling and everything. They got good energy, but it sounds almost tired. It almost sounds like they are just thinking about where they're going to have a steak and what woman they're going to try to sleep with that night. Like, it sounds like they're so bored and ready to go on with their lives.
Can I tell you, it's like listening to that. Have you ever been to the Baseball Hall of Fame?
No, I have not.
There's a room where that plays on a loop. Can you imagine working there?
Oh.
Like, by the, you'd have it memorized a couple days and you'd be like, I got this memorized. This is fun.
Oh, yeah.
And what do we think? 3-4 weeks in, you're like, I need a gun.
I
want to die.
I worked at a museum in Minneapolis that had a Pillsbury Doughboy ad on a loop.
So
every once in a while, you just get in range and you just hear, like, again and again.
Oh, fuck. No.
Absolutely destroys your sanity.
What was this museum where there's a Pillsbury Doughboy?
Oh, it's called Mill City Museum. It's a history of the flour milling industry in Minneapolis, and General Mills got their start there, so there's an advertising section.
Holy shit.
That plays commercials on a loop. Yeah.
This could be an entire podcast. See, this is why, one of the many reasons I want to visit Minneapolis. There are some things there that I would not expect to be in a major metropolitan area that has what is regarded as a very good theater scene.
Oh, yeah.
But they also have a flower museum.
Yeah, with explosion demonstrations. It's great.
Yes, now that's awesome. Holy crap. Yeah, so that kind of stuff kind of kills you, and you feel like at this point, Abbott and Costello already... And I don't know if it even says on here, pardon me.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it says what year they recorded this, but yeah, they sound just dead.
Yeah.
Their souls are dead at this point.
And the actual album, as you were showing me, has a little bit more context about where the clips are from when you like look at the back, but only a little bit. It just says the name and the beat of the bit. Mm-hmm. But just listening to it on the MP3 you sent me of the direct album, like, if this was an actual exercise and let's educate people and bring them in, you know, and say, like, recorded here, this is Jack Benny on his show, but he's welcoming guest so and so, and you could start to get a context
a little bit.
But this is an exercise in how quickly can you figure out comedy with no context of what's the relationship between the people. Are they playing characters, or are they a comedian who plays an exaggerated character of themselves, of like, what basic knowledge do you need to find any of this funny?
Yeah, I wonder if it's the generation, as you say, that this was being bought for or were buying it. If there's like this weird mimetic relationship to what's going on inside the comedy, where it's like, oh, I remember that one. Because, I mean, there is a famous bit, the Jack Benny line, where your money or your life, I'm thinking about it, or whatever he says. Yeah, that's a famous bit. But the other stuff, like, I feel like these people, like, lived with it, maybe. I don't know. I could be wrong. But they also did, like, a million episodes a year. So why pick these things out of context is very strange to me.
Yeah, and the Groucho Marx bit. Is one of the not as funny.
I mean,
it's still Groucho, and it's still charming. It's still just Groucho being like, get two people in front of me, and I'll kind of make fun of them.
Yeah.
Tease them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there aren't any killer lines,
no.
And I have to imagine that there's, like, endless tape of Groucho Marx saying...
Of course.
...killer lines, and somebody's just like, that one.
I mean, pick something from... Maybe if he did a radio, something from one of the movies would have been a better, but it's from You Bet Your Life, of all things, it's from his damn game show.
Yeah.
Which he was cute, but at that time he's already tired Groucho, you know, which if you ever want to hear a good, listen to Gilbert Gottfried do the many generations of Groucho. It's the best thing on the planet. Because by the end, if you've never heard An Evening with Groucho Marx, which we talked about on this podcast, at the end of it, it's sort of just slow and sad and just, you know, thanks for being here, everybody. I'm wearing a beret for some reason, which he was. He's wearing a beret a lot in the 70s.
Really?
Yes. He's got a very weird story and supposedly sad. Maybe some people stole his money. I can't remember the whole. All I know is Bud Cort from Harold and Maude lived with him for a while. I still don't know why. I'm still not sure why that is.
When these old comedians were accessible, like there's the stories of Jerry Lewis just finding like the weird kind of typical Los Angeles apartment that Laurel lived in.
Holy shit.
And just like, and Dick Van Dyke, like all these sort of successors and heirs to Stan Laurel were just like, well, we can go talk to him.
Yeah, right.
He lives over there.
Yeah, that's true.
Invites people in. Like,
they were in the book much more commonly, don't get me wrong, you can still do it. I've literally, within the last week, I've been hunting people down from stuff where I'm like, people could be dead soon from like my favorite albums. And I'm like, okay, I might as well try.
Okay, so you're trying to find them to contact them, not to like stand outside their house.
No, if they invite me.
Okay.
I have been invited and we'll go.
You're a podcast vampire. You must be invited
exactly.
in. Exactly. Excellent.
Exactly right. This starts out with a weird, okay, so I don't know enough about Eddie Cantor, and I know there's going to be certain people in my audience who are like, how do you not know Eddie Cantor? But it's fine. He does this thing called the Mad Russian, and maybe it's a very famous character, but it is barely a Russian accent, and I'm still not sure. It's a lot of misunderstandings and crazy talk.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it felt to me like even part of it was that they screwed up, because that's one of the things I like I was saying about these live ones, is you get the sense sometimes where there's a much larger laugh than the line seems like it should
get.
Yeah. And it's clear something's going on in the studio.
Yes, there's a lot of that.
In that line, there's a line in there about he calls himself Salami, and it seems like that was part of the bit, but maybe not exactly.
Yeah, it seems like he might have slightly did the wrong thing, because it gets this weird, like, you fucked up laugh.
Yeah, exactly. He mm-hmm. got to, isn't it funny that, yeah, mm-hmm. he utterly screwed up.
Yeah, you can kind of hear him, like, smiling through it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. Like, that's it's part of the reason I like listening to comedy podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, I like listening to see what they'll create and if they'll fuck up and how they recover. It's part of the charm.
Even better with a live audience and better mm-hmm. with a more strict society. That
yes.
was one of the fascinating things.
That's
you were asking
true,
about
yeah.
Offensive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's clearly a couple bits where they're trying to get away with a wink and a nod to the audience and get mm-hmm. past sponsors
oh God,
or censors. And sometimes the audience was totally on board for it
mm-hmm.
on the album, and sometimes they weren't, which I love listening
There's
for that.
One where we're going to get to in a minute that is hard.
Yes. Yes.
I'm actually surprised when we get to Fibber, McGee, and Molly, that there's no closet bit. Their classic bit, no closet bit. It's two of the guys.
Yeah, I've never been a huge fan of Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't delved deep into their oeuvre
right.
because I've heard
right.
just a little bit, and they just don't have, to me, they don't have either edge where it feels like they're going
yeah.
to do something they maybe shouldn't,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have that utter charm that like Jack Benny has,
sure,
you know, or even Groucho Marx, even when he's not being funny, it's
yeah.
still like I would just listen to him.
Absolutely,
I'd listen to him just order pizza, you know.
The thing about Fibber, McGee, and Molly, and this I only know little bits about it from doing research on trying to research the origins of sketch comedy, audio sketch comedy.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so Fibber, McGee, and Molly, because they're so well known for like their sound effects and stuff, I tried to dig deep to go before them, and the guys who created that show created a show in Detroit, and I'm hoping that was the original one, but I feel like it's so well known, I guess, for being like just one of the first sitcoms and just being so long lasting, and so, you know, it was pretty sound effects heavy, except for this sketch. This is like that's what I was hoping for. I was just really just hoping for sketch.
It has the
like,
big
sound effects.
The big sound effect at the end,
at
right?
At the end, yes,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that was kind of the thing. I
yeah,
guess. It's
okay.
Just like, let's build up. Some shit falls out of a closet, usually, is the deal.
Yeah, okay. So I feel like I've now experienced Fibber, McGee, and Molly in that one
yeah.
track without Molly being there, because it was just Fibber, right?
Yeah, and the only reason I know about that, the only reason I ever found out about Fibber, McGee, and Molly was an episode of News Radio. So
okay.
I just feel like I should point that out, too, where they make that joke where at one point Andy Dick is just, all the characters are being, sorry, guys, I apologize for doing this. But in one episode, all the characters are given cars for Christmas, and he's given Fibber, McGee, and Molly tapes, and he's like, yeah, I'm just really excited, or this guy's, you know, in his house, and a bunch of crap falls out of a closet, and he just gets so upset. And that is it. Like, that they recreate a Fibber, McGee, and Molly for the sake of it.
Okay.
And that's kind of their deal.
Yeah, this one was weird in that there was no context offered as to Fibber wanted to be tied up.
Uh-huh. That was the first thing that threw me. Like,
practice
whoa.
Escaping.
Uh-huh.
Okay, fair enough, but it still felt a little bit like, are you trying to make a bondage joke and slip it by, or is this totally innocent?
Uh-huh.
I couldn't really tell.
Uh-huh.
And then a stranger comes over, and that he would ask the stranger to tie him up. It seems all like a little bit of a tortured setup.
A little bit. Yeah. And then he gets held up because
yeah.
it's
but he's got a closet full of crap, which saves him.
Mm-hmm. Next, there's literally nothing to say about Who's on First. There's nothing. There's one. The only time I ever enjoyed it was as a kid when there was one version where he says, I don't give a damn. And I remember being like,
yeah.
This old black and white guy said damn instead of darn.
Yeah. The only thing I have to say about it is I'm sure it was impressive in vaudeville.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was beat to death.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Like, it's, if, as written, it's brilliant. Like, it is perfectly put together.
Yeah.
I just, the joy is gone for me.
Yes,
now. I, and I hate to say that too, because I love old timey shit. But it's, I'm just like, okay. I won't fast forward out of respect for the album and Joseph. And we're both, and
you can
maybe
always
something.
Fast forward on my account again.
Okay.
I want to put together like an existential dread version of it, where it's like there's nothing on first, just for people who are tired of it.
Oh my like, God, waiting for
sadness
who's on
is
first.
On second. No point is on third.
I think this has been talked about in another podcast, but have you ever... I've never seen it because I don't think I want to watch it. Dino Stamatopoulos and Andy Dick. Speaking of Andy Dick doing Who's On First, but in it, I cannot remember which does which, but one of them literally flat out actually keeps punching him every time. Like actual punches, not fake punches. Like he's bleeding by the end of it.
No, I have not watched that and probably won't.
Yeah, it sounds upsetting, right? Yeah, one of them is a sadist, like in real life. One of them's quite a sadist, the other's quite a masochist, and it just worked out. But that's the version that seems like the ultimate version, and again, won't ever watch it.
Pain is on first. Uh-huh. Nice.
So I'm glad there's some Jack Benny on here. Not surprised.
Yes. This is the first thing that made me laugh out loud was the beginning of the Fred Allen Jack Benny bit. Jack was born ignorant and he's been losing ground ever since.
This is one of those. This is like Fred Allen and Jack Benny getting together. That's as close. That's the kind of Avengers Infinity War meme of the 40s. You know, it's like these two crossovers, like they hate each other and they're going to duel on show. It's adorable to listen to them like fake fight. I don't know. I'm charmed by both of them.
Yeah, I think Jack Benny is, I mean, in terms of model of sketch, but more model of sitcom, like I think he's the absolute perfect model of pick a charming person, pick two or three hangups, and then just have 8 million jokes that get at those hangups from different areas. Like, my go-to sitcom is Cheers. And they do great character development, but it is that Jack Benny model of here's the list of Sam's things.
Yeah.
You know, he used to be an alcoholic. He's a womanizer. Right. He is, you know, afraid about having inferior intelligence. And he likes his hair, and on and on and on. Each character has their bag of Jack Bennyisms, basically.
It's true, yeah. God, that's a good point. You've seen this, right?
Oh, yeah, your Cheers Lego set. Yeah, no.
If somebody brings up Cheers,
anytime that you hear me pausing, it's because I'm staring at your Lego Cheers set.
I'm still developing it. There's some things. I do kind of want to do the restaurant upstairs. I kind of want to build
Oh, Melville's? Yeah.
Yeah, at some point that's got to happen. I love Jack Benny so much. Just, again, he's super charming, but also there's this I've always loved characters who are just a bit of a dick, but also charming, and also like they've got a heart of gold. Like, because Jack Benny's character is never a bad guy; he's just a bit of a dipshit, and
he's very aware of his flaws. And like, you get I think he's humanized because you get that sense that he's gonna try not to be cheap every time, but then when it comes down to it, he's gonna try not to lie about his age. But when it comes down to it, he's going to. You know? Yeah.
And the thing is, that's just as like basic of a bit as anything else that's on here, but it's, I don't know, there's just more finesse to it. And I don't know what Jack Benny had that gave him more finesse, or if it was just better writing in general.
I was going to say better writers.
Yeah,
I mean, it feels like a little bit like this is truly what he did, where I'm letting what I know about them in real life of Abbott and Costello affect how I read the bits.
Sure.
But I feel like Jack Benny, if you were alive today and he was in the LA comedy community, he'd be one of those people like, that guy cares about comedy. He studied the craft. Yeah, he wants it to be right. And then, you know, people in the comedy community who are just like, they would not care if literal monkey handed them the jokes. They got the laughs and then they got the money and the attention. And it feels like you can tell the difference when people are like, I'm here for the money and the attention, not for the actual love of the craft. And to me, Jack Benny feels like he loved the craft.
It's a really good point. I don't think about it that way that often. So often I just think of it as it was absolutely a studio system, just like the film business was. And these guys, you know, started in one way, they continued in the other way, they became successful this way, and they just kept being guys who made money and then bought Toluca Lake, if you're Bob Hope. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is probably the big unspoken difference, and now I want to look into it more. I think you're right. He does seem like a guy who gives enough of a fuck that he brings in the right people.
Yeah.
To make him look good, of course, but also to make him get the fucking solid laughs that he could somehow manage to get for another until he died. Like, anytime he was on a special, he was still at least charming.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Him on the Smothers Brothers and shit. So rather than like, and I love George Burns, but George Burns was, like people have said, he was 100 years old from the time he was 40. He was just doing that bit, and oh my God.
Yeah.
So, do you want to move on to Jackie
Gleason? Oh, yeah,
Gleason?
Let's do this one.
Oh, boy, oh, boy.
Holy
oh boy.
Hannah.
Now, what's it officially entitled here? Let me see.
Yeah, I didn't have that.
Yeah, this is one of the... This is a problem, guys. We're going off of Discogs.com, and it just at some point just started listing who was in it and not what the name of the bit was. Again, this just says Jackie Gleason. I see why, because it only says Jackie Gleason on here.
Okay,
on the
so
back, too.
No specific bit that this is from, just
right.
Random. This is what Jackie Gleason would say to you if you ran into him at a party.
And I'm assuming it's from his show. I'm assuming it's from the Jackie Gleason show. Let's see. Well, this might be Dumont TV's Cavalcade of Stars. Entirely sure. But, oh, here we go. His jukebox monologue. Here from a radio performance was part of his original nightclub act.
Okay. Well,
that explains
makes
a bit
sense.
Of it. However, there's something to it. So he's a guy who ends up having... becoming almost as well known for releasing just a ton of music albums. Like, you can go anywhere around
right.
here now and get all these, like, Jackie Gleason presents
An Evening with Something.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And it's got him with his, like,
music
smiling, chubby
blank
face.
By, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh, exactly. And so he's got this kind of classy air about him. I don't know if he had it then when this one was put together, but there's this kind of, like, cool, artsy, like, I'm going to tell a story.
Yeah.
Here's why I don't want you to use the word jukebox. And then it gets, like, is a classic format of take a thing... make a dumb joke about it that's like, okay, so we're talking about a jukebox as though it's a woman.
Yeah.
And that's the bit. And that bit can work and kind of usually fails because you stretch a metaphor to its fucking death. But there, I know we're both thinking of the same moment, right?
Well, with the audible audience reaction,
uh-huh.
where it had gone too far.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were all with him until, you know, saying as explicit things as, put a nickel in her.
Mm-hmm.
Her neon was sagging, but it in old slot. Is that the one?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
it's just an old slot. And it's like,
yeah,
and the audience is like, no, oh. No, Jackie.
You can in like a modern audience, if they didn't like something, we'd be like, oh,
uh-huh.
And you could almost tell it just like, oh, like we knew you were making that joke, but now you made it too clear, so we can't. You've
uh-huh.
broken like the societal agreement where you're saying that. We know that you're saying that, but together we're all pretending you're not saying that.
Yeah.
And by getting that visceral and nasty sounding,
uh-huh.
that they were like, you punctured the agreement, and now, now we have to stare at the truth.
You hear it in his voice where he's like, ha-ha, get what I did, kids? Like, this is what I used to do when I was drunk off my tits.
An
like,
old slot. okay, sorry.
Oh,
yeah.
Yep. Let's back off that for a second.
And he does.
Yeah, he does. He does. Because, again, he's... I like Jackie Gleason. He's got charm. Again, he's just inherently charming somehow.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is about him. But, yeah, that's that one's rough.
Yeah, yeah.
And they chose to include it, which is interesting. I'm not sure what the what the motivation was behind that.
The golden age of comedy. And one time where Jackie Gleason didn't really land it. Yeah,
uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, it's a fucking dud. Like, it's like a... oh, my good God. This is... And, again, this is a two-record set. So this is the end of side one. Okay, and Jackie Gleason, that is a real hell of a banger to end on. And I like so much that there's a bit, this is, like, I think in all the albums I've heard, I don't think I've ever heard anything from your show of shows, which I'm assuming this bit is with Sid Caesar
yeah.
and Imogene Coca. And I love that show when I've been able to see it. It's
yeah.
not like a show you can buy on DVD because I'm assuming a lot of it's gone. I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And it's a cute bit. What were your thoughts on it? I mean, how much of a fan, if any, are you of Sid Caesar?
I'm not super familiar with Sid Caesar.
Okay.
I've seen bits that I like. I think there's something about him that I've never like personally super connected to. And
mm-hmm.
this was actually the hardest bit on the record for me.
Uh-huh.
Because like the Jackie Gleason one, even though it's defensive, that's why I like things like this that aren't curated. Because
yeah.
then as a performer or fan or student of comedy... you can hear audiences have always been audiences, and sometimes things land and sometimes they don't,
mm-hmm.
and that's fascinating. This one for me is just, it was killing with the audience, but the joke was just Sid Caesar yells at a woman.
Yes.
And doesn't let her speak.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of like, I'm just not here for this right now.
Right, right. And I think there's a lot of Sid Caesar was his face. Not to say that was it, but like that was his, like if they were going to pick one thing to put on here, it should have been him. And it would have been on theme. It should have been him doing one of his language bits where he fakes knowing a language. Like,
yeah.
that was a thing he was really good at. Like, making up... again, you, and I understand if people would be offended by it if you heard it today, but being able to pretend to speak German or French or whatever, he grew up in his dad's restaurant listening to people speak all these different languages,
yeah.
And so he could just pretend, fake the, like, the patter of
it. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so that, and that was a bit he did on stage a bunch. That would have played better on here than, like,
yeah.
what you're saying. It is just a one note, and I, it doesn't sound like a great example of the two of them either. Like, and Imogene Coke is a great performer too. It doesn't, it's a weird choice.
Yeah, yeah. And it begins a long string of yelling on this particular album, which I normally really like yelling comedy.
Sure, sure.
But it gets to be a little excessive.
Mm-hmm. I honestly expected the Bickersons to be on here, which was literally just a sketch with the two of them yelling at each other. I have two records of two people yelling at each other.
I think if you approached a random person on the street and said the Bickersons, do you remember that Saturday Night Live sketch? And they'd be like, oh yeah, the Bickersons from like it sounds so much like an SNL sketch.
Absolutely,
like
does.
An overdone. Like, get it? They bicker.
Right. And I know I heard it growing up, and I don't know what I assumed it was.
Yeah.
I did not know it was a fucking radio thing. anything George Burns, actually anything Gracie Allen touches, I will listen to.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the best written thing, she's so fucking charming.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep saying charming, but he knew it. She carried that whole act.
Yeah.
And I how much of their stuff are you familiar with?
Again, I've listened to bits and pieces, but I never super connected to it or really fell in love with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think what I'm thinking about as we're doing this is a lot of the radio shows that were about that comfort of a familiar relationship never super grabbed me.
Okay.
You know, and I think I was more interested in the more raucous comedians where something weird might happen.
I can see that.
You know, on one of their recordings, or that they had more of a relationship, so they're kind of connected to, like, I like listening to Bob Hope stuff because he's...
Sure.
So connected to the tapestry of all of entertainment, you know, and has his relationships with all the different people. So, I don't know. For me, like, this bit was really interesting because I'm not super familiar with them.
Sure.
And there was one line that I was curious to ask you if you thought that they were trying to be edgy.
Okay.
So, it's, for the most part, just a fun, dumb bit about Gracie trying to explain a weird incident with donuts and pants, which I like both of those things, so I'm on board. I like comedy about donuts and pants. But then she's talking about him wearing the pants two different directions. And George Burns says, oh, you think it was to show that he could go either way? And I didn't know if that was a directional joke or an actual, like, we're really trying to speak to the hipsters and see if they get that we're making a...
Holy crap.
A joke about sex.
I wonder. Oh, my God.
Old
now,
radio sex.
I feel like I need to re-listen to it now. I wouldn't put it past them. If that's the case, whoever put this together maybe was a little sinister. I mean, like, sinister in that they're like, let's put the sneaky stuff on
the
here.
Naughty stuff. The
yeah,
golden
that's
age
really
of naughty comedy.
Funny to me.
I'm probably just reading something
maybe,
into it,
but
there was just
a
sly the way he said it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm speaking past the censors to the real audience kind of vibe.
Right, yeah. She, I gotta say, too, Gracie was a frigging trooper to play a dumbass for that long.
Yeah,
but she could do it well. Like,
yeah.
She did it again, and half the time she would still win out.
Yeah.
And the more I listen to it, the more I'm convinced that Kristen Schaal needs to play her in something. I just feel like people just that needs to happen.
That would be awesome.
Immediately.
And I did appreciate, after hearing you know, a lot of the yelling and more coming, that wasn't the shtick.
Yes.
That it was just seriously trying to comprehend.
And
yeah, and then what are you talking about with the donuts in the pants?
And that, I mean, their real life relationship was so loving, like, and I think that's what people related to that so well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they had plenty of that, but then on, if they had done, I don't think they might have yelled a bit on their show, but I think it was mostly this. It was mostly kind of gentle comedy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was lovely. This was lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to not like, even if it's not the funniest thing. Speaking of not the funniest thing, we already talked about this a bit, but Groucho Marx.
I can't believe.
I love him so much,
I know,
too.
But there's no there in this one. It's just. Seems utterly random.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's him talking to a dame. That's why I'm going to call her a dame, because it's old time.
Oldie timey.
Now, the weird thing is, you ever watch or listen to an old show and you're like, was this planned? Is this person an actor? This seems like it's, like, people are acting like it's spontaneous. Did people just speak as though they were scripted? Like, because this lady really sounds like she's just fucking knocking a couple down, even though, like, she gets the funniest lines in it, even
yeah.
though, you know, so it's weird to me. I can't tell.
I wonder how much people were coached on things like this that are game shows of like, okay, now here's really the script. You are going to say, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such, Alaska, America. And then Groucho's going to ask you about your parents or whatever, and you're going to say, my parents are so-and-so, Imogene from so-and-so. Like, because it does sound all very scripted.
Yes, yeah. And again, I can't, part of me is like, well, maybe that's just how these people work. But then it's like, they're, and I'm assuming, and I don't know if this is a You Bet Your Life from the, people are going to hate me for this, maybe it's from the radio, because it sounds different. Maybe they did have little scripts in front of them.
Yeah,
or,
who knows?
Or just like, say your thing, and then Groucho's going to set you up for this bit, or you set up Groucho for this. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't tell, but either way, she gets the best laughs in it, and it is not the best example of Groucho. Get something from the fucking movies. For Christ's sake, that's when he was at his best.
Yeah.
He did one of the greatest war satires of all time, people. Put that in the thing. Let's go to this next one, because I knew Ernie Kovacs was on here, but I had never heard this bit, and I did not know that it was him while I was listening to it, because this last half of the album I heard in the car.
Okay.
So... how familiar are you with Ernie Kovacs?
Only a little bit as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. We did cover his album once. There was no point in releasing a comedy album for Ernie Kovacs because he's almost not entirely visual, but the man broke ground in TV like nobody's business. And it's weird to do a comedy album, an audio album of his stuff.
Yeah.
Was it
an audio album that he recorded specifically to be an audio album?
No,
or
it was
just
all
yanked?
Stuff taken from his show. It's like, so it's what's like... the thing that might work as an audio bit?
Okay.
And I think it was released posthumously, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Okay.
I think. So, yeah. He's great. I mean, it's as good as like anything you're going to get from him, but it's a weird idea to even do an album of that.
Yeah.
And this one is, what the hell is it called again?
The
Question
Mr.
Man.
The Questions Man. Okay,
yes.
Mr. Questions Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought this one was hilarious.
Yeah.
And at first, it was very low-key compared to some of the others, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
But it's just such a nice setup, knockdown, ridiculous questions. Oh, you think that's a ridiculous question? Here's a more ridiculous answer.
Uh-huh.
And that... the one about the globe of like, well, if the Earth is round and people are walking upside down, so why don't they fall off the planet? And he's like, well, they do. Like,
that's, yeah, like, that's it.
That's great. That made me laugh.
Yeah, you know, and that is like a Kovacs. I mean, absurdism taken to its just absolute extreme is Ernie Kovacs.
Yeah,
that's...
and that great contrast between his voice of like, without being overly pompous or like playing the professor, he has that like, trust me, it's factual. People are falling off the Earth all the time. It's
yeah,
like
that's a good point.
Believable.
That is why it works. You know, and that's funny because I remember listening to it, and the first time I went, wait, is this a bit from a quiz show? And then I didn't realize until I looked at it later. It's like, no, this is a fucking full bit.
Yeah.
By Ernie Kovacs. Yeah, good call. Because good actor, good convincing actor, delightful man. Fascinating. Very fascinating life story, actually.
All right, I'm going to dig into Ernie Kovacs.
Jeff Goldblum played him in a movie once. Apparently not a good watch, but he did it.
I don't care.
He did it.
I
yeah,
watch
right?
it.
Yeah, I know. I kind of want to watch it anyway. Yeah, Ernie Kovacs is fascinating. Actually, I don't normally do this, but I will recommend people go back and listen to the Ernie Kovacs episode because the guy I talked to, he grew up in his grandmother's house, which used to be Ernie Kovacs' house.
Damn.
And there's some stuff in the attic that may be like lost Kovacs shit that we don't know how to get transferred, and we keep trying to find a way to do that. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That's insane.
Yeah, I know.
That's a find.
It's a good episode. It's a very fun episode to listen to. I really like Milton Berle.
Yeah.
Milton Berle's the next bit. It didn't 100% stand out to me, except for... actually, that's a lie. You know what? That's a lie. It's also another bit of absurdism and kind of like... I don't know. He's... there's yelling in this I enjoy, actually.
Yes, this was great yelling. I loved this yelling. Yeah, so this one was really great for me because at first I was like, all right, I like Milton Berle. This seems like a little bit of a slow burn. And again, like some of these comedians who are like larger than life in their place in the history of entertainment, where people almost more know more things about them as humans than like, you know, exactly their work.
Sure.
I was really curious to see like, what is just an utterly random sketch?
Yeah.
Is it going to be rise up to the legend of Milton Berle?
Everything you said, by the way, can be taken as a penis joke so far, and I just feel like I just need to comment on it because I can't stop thinking about rise up, biggest. I'm just a child. You shouldn't say these things in front of a child.
This is the legend of Milton Berle,
it is.
Right?
Yeah.
Just take out enough to win Uncle Melty because he allegedly had a famously large... penis, right?
Well, it was true.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever denied it. Everybody's no. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Okay, so I'll take credit for phrasing all that to sound like penis jokes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime. So It was a slow build and a wonderful climax to the sketch. I actually mean that.
And it is true.
It's true. Yeah, because it did. It started out with just the, okay, this is a bureaucracy sketch.
Yep.
And he wants a library card and he can't get it. And it rises to the challenge. now I can't stop it. That I think this was one of the ones that was written well.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just people sort of like, the energy and my charisma will drive this okay writing to a point of, you know, the escalation from, well, I went and did this. Now I bought a house. Now I wait until Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And that, to me, the coup de grace that the name of the book had changed from 3 years of blah, blah, blah to 4.5 years of blah, blah, blah. It's like, great. And
brilliant.
Still relatable. It still is like, oh, if you have a problem with your internet provider and you have to call them, it still feels exactly 100%. Like what Milton Berle is going through to get a library card. So it's still relatable.
Yeah. And I've always liked, I almost called him Uncle Milty like I do that. I've always loved Milton Berle, but he's never struck me as a guy who, like, again, I think his charm sells him. He's never struck me as a great actor, but in this, he's solid and funny and like, I think I'm used to seeing him and stuff, and just hearing him was kind of interesting. And then, like, the one guy in the library just keeps yelling.
Oh, yeah, they're quiet! Get out of the library!
Every time. And I don't know why that tickled me so much, but it's...
Well, yeah, it works really well, the great library, be quiet in the library. Something infuriating happens in the library. Normally, that's as far as the joke goes, but then that there's a guard in the library who screams louder than the person who screamed in the library is like a great one-upping of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Simple, good.
Elegant.
No more penis jokes. That's good. Well done. I was reverse looking at these. So it's the next one that, like, I love Red Skelton, but this one threw me. I don't know his characters. I just know, like, one or two movies of his. So
yeah.
this Whittle Boy, which I think is how it's written, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah.
Where is it? It's Mean Whittle Kid.
Mean Whittle Kid. Well, that is what it is.
That is exactly what it is.
I can't disagree with that.
Nope.
Yeah. I've also never really connected to him.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a couple bits and went, great, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
And this one definitely was like, it almost felt like a comic escalation of, all right, this album has set up the theme of men yelling at women. How can we change it up? Oh, an adult man will pretend to be a baby yelling at his mother. You know, it's a twist on the old gag, men yell at women.
Yeah, he's just a little shithead. That's it. That was the whole fucking bit.
Yeah, there wasn't, I mean, it had a couple laughs.
Yeah.
I didn't laugh, but.
Uh-uh. Uh-huh.
No, I understand.
Yeah, you
comedy
get where
changes.
The points are supposed to be,
yeah.
And then it's like, okay, well, all right, it recognizes that as an attempt.
You know, there's that fine line of comedy that comedy is ugly, it's wrestling with the grotesque, and there's that Steve Martin line of I'm paraphrasing, but the art of comedy is making them laugh before they puke, of like, you have to be destructive and weird.
Uh-huh.
And I think for me, this just crossed the puke line of like, it is funny that a clearly like 40, 50-year-old man is pretending to be an angry little boy.
Mm-hmm.
But it just crossed that line to me of like, that's creeping me out.
Yeah, absolutely. And he just keeps laying into that fucking dumb little speech impediment that he's supposed to have.
And
it's just like, oh, God, okay. I get it. Okay, so the next one, I'm going to apologize for it not standing out. Maybe it's the sketch's fault, but I don't remember what the hell it was. This is Oscar Levant with Fred Allen.
Yeah, this was one of those. Oscar Levant was clearly a noted musician at the time.
Oh, yes, uh-huh.
And it was just a little bit with Fred Allen's the comedian trying to work with the famous person who is not an actual comedian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, to me, there was like one actual joke in it about he gets paid different amounts for piano stuff in movies because sometimes he plays them and other times he moves them. Hey.
All right. Yep. That's always one of those things where you've got a professional comedian. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you're stuck with somebody who is not a performer like that. Yeah.
But I'm fascinated by those things for the, Sinatra is referenced right away at the top of this album.
Uh-huh.
You know, those references that are going to be golden. They're like somebody... Jack Benny's going to make fun of Bob Hope. We all still, if you're a fan of comedy, generally know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They love, then you're like, Oscar Levant, you know.
Sure.
Famous that we all know. Like,
yeah.
I love it when there's references that are totally outdated.
It's, you know, what's crazy too is like, again, if you're maybe that's the thing too, is if you're a music lover,
yeah, maybe I'll bet you idiots.
Of course you fucking moron. But like, there's also a chance that you're not. I interviewed a guy for a different podcast the other day, and like we digging into it on the podcast. I'm doing like typing up research because I've got the guy on the phone, and at some point it comes up that this guy's father, who was a musician and had done this and that and this and that, and released this little Christmas card with a record inside of it.
Okay? Oh, cool.
This is why I was interviewing him, because I had discovered this, and. It just comes up in the middle of my research. Oh, he won a fucking Emmy. He won the first Emmy. The first year Emmys were out there, he won one of them.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and it's just like, so he was somebody for a year. It's just this weird thing where you're, I don't know, maybe nobody did know who the man was.
Yeah, I think it's just a reminder that fleeting fame has always been with us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and that those awards don't always necessarily mean anything.
Yeah.
Oh, my TV's on. So the next one is, and I'm trying to find out what this show, was there seriously just a Baron Munchausen show? This is Jack Pearl playing Baron Munchausen.
Okay.
I'll just read it right from the album. That's easier enough. That took the audiences for a ride on his broken syntax and exaggeration. The Baron never believed in understanding his adventures. His was the greatest of adventures, with animals the most ferocious, and always in his wild stories, there was that little bit of a liar we all know in life.
All right.
So, really set you up for some comedy gold.
Yeah, riding that syntax. He took me on a syntax ride.
Uh-huh. It's so much that I tripped the fuck over it. again, I don't know. Maybe it's just the rest. Well, not the rest of this album. There's some solid shit on the rest of this album, but this didn't stand out to me at all.
The only thing that made me laugh is, again, when it was clearly going for a little bit more edge than it was a little bit of a risk at the time of like... Mm-hmm. It's mostly cute jokes about, like, how, you said 91,000 gallons of milk, but now you're saying 41. How? I condensed it. Like, great. Okay. Fine. But then they're, like, talking about chickens, and somebody's, do you go in for chickens? Like, oh, not at my age. Like, it felt a little bit like, were you trying to slip in a joke about having sex with chickens?
I know.
Yeah. Are you Gonzo? Okay.
Yeah, good call. Good call. Yeah, see, this is another problem, folks, when you were listening to half of the album in your car. Again, Joseph Scrimshaw, the most prepared guest in the history of this podcast. That's okay. I'm not embarrassed. I
over-prepare.
Appreciate it.
I over-prepare. I have a problem.
That's good. Next is Bob and Ray. Their energy I have always loved the shit out of. I really like Bob and Ray.
Yeah.
What stood again? Let's do this here. How much do you know of theirs? Like, I've only got one of their albums, so I
again,
don't even know.
Only enough to just be like, I know their shtick.
Yep,
but I haven't been a huge fan.
Mm-hmm.
But this was great in this context. I loved it because there was context. This was the first spot on here where it had a little bit of the intro of whatever show they were doing that set up what the shtick actually was.
Yeah, that's nice.
They reenact historical events as though they were happening. And then I loved that it was just mostly an anti-joke. Clearly they're older than, or more recent than some of the other acts on here.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to see, like, oh, this is getting into a different era of comedy.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly just the joke that they are there for history as train tracks are laid and nothing particularly as interesting is happening. It's just this very boring, I was going to say pedestrian, but it's about train tracks, so it's obviously not pedestrian. But just like, oh, the famous rail spike is being hit in. The guy hits his thumb, you know? Like in the interview, he's like, what do you have to say? No. Putting the train tracks down, it's good. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
You know, it's kind of nice to see where Chris Elliott gets his shit from.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, it's perfectly appropriate. Like,
yeah.
Because not everybody follows in their parents' footsteps or does even anything similar, but you could probably draw pretty strong parallels between the weird shit he was doing on Letterman
and the
weird shit they were doing.
Oh, he's like, yeah, it really seems like he is looking, oh, you think you do anti-comedy, Dad? Mm-hmm. Let me show you anti-comedy.
Hell yeah, yeah. And then his daughter went on SNL, and I don't know if she did anything crazy on there, but, you know, that's three generations of fucking weird sketch comedy.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is. I don't know that there's a lot of that out there. It's a fun, and that's my style of shit. Like, I when I write sketch, like, I try and write stuff that is almost pointless to listen to. Like, it's just verging on there's no reason to be here. But but there's something to listen to.
Existential dread is on first.
Yeah. I like this. That you need to write that. I had never heard Tallulah Bankhead. So this next thing is Fred Allen and Tallulah Bankhead. Fred Allen rearing his head again. I had never heard her do a bit. I've only seen her in movies, so I didn't know much about her, like, radio persona at all.
Yeah, I heard her do some bits on an old Martin and Lewis radio show, which I like Martin and Lewis a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a radio show that didn't last very long, but I've listened to every episode of it, and mm-hmm. Tallulah Bankhead pops up, and she's funny. She's solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had also forgotten that Fred Allen is the basis of so many different cartoon characters from the 60s. That's all I can hear every time is that voice. Yeah,
everybody's just doing their impression of his voice.
Pretty much. Yeah, him and Phil Silvers. Those are two guys who reuse a ton.
Yeah.
I don't remember a ton about this sketch. I'm so sorry. The next few stand out to me, but this one, no.
This one stood out to me. This one might have been one of my favorites.
Okay.
Yeah, because it just had such a solid setup that, it felt relevant. It's dated in part, but in other parts it's totally relatable because they basically do the same scene twice. In one is if they are just going through a normal family routine while mockingly talking up their sponsors to an insane degree, and that they had some legitimately still funny to this day lines to me, they had a factory tested pussy willow mattress that I slept on, and that it really takes the guesswork out of sleeping, which is like a parody of ad copy that still works to this
day. Absolutely, yeah.
And then they mad and say, "Oh well, this is dumb. Nobody ever talks like this. Let's show them what it would really be like." And then it is darkly violent. To the point where, their kid wakes up and they are slapping the kid. And earlier thing had been about her only having one tooth and that being kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's like, "Oh, you toothless monster, go gum a donut."
Yeah, okay. No, you know what? It was the second one that stood out. Again, driving. I remember listening oh, fuck, this is my shit.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It got dark, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, they had the joke about the bird's cage. The bird was happy that its cage was lined with this specific newspaper to be like, shit on the news. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man. And they get ended with him shooting his family, right?
Uh-huh. That's where I'm like, yep, that's how I used to write a sketch.
Yep, that's pretty dark stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Fuck. And I want to know what year that's from. That's the kind of surprise. I did not expect this is the kind of shit you'd get away with at a certain period. It felt too, later period to me.
Yeah,
I'm
and
wrong,
I think
obviously.
For people who are, sort of Generation X who feel like our generation invented meta, it's cool to hear stuff like this that's super meta. That's like, okay, we're radio comedians and we're sick of saying the dumb platitude copy of our sponsors, so we're going to mock it. Then we're going to mock our mocking of it.
Right. And I think there's a lot of stuff that got appropriated in this weird way by boomers where I feel like maybe there are times when they were missing the point. Not always. There's definitely something to be said for the people who were parodying the patriarchy and parodying how bad that shit looked on TV and how women were treated on TV and how there were no minorities.
Absolutely.
Things like that stuff's all legitimate, but I do think there are points where they're like, I'm the first one to notice this shit when what you're saying is absolutely true. No, people were in the middle of dumb shit and noticing it, calling it out, still getting paid, which is kind of the goal. It's like, I'm going to get paid, but I'm still going to say fuck you to this thing.
Yeah, it didn't start changing culture, until the 60s, 70s.
Sure,
But there's a lot that's really subversive in 40s, 50s comedy if you dig for it.
Yeah, and I wonder because for me, having the benefit of so much hindsight and the benefit of so much review of this old culture, for me, it's there's a burning, and I'm I love this, and I love the idea that maybe I could one day do comedy that's getting people just jazzed. But I do want to know, because there had been people listening who would get a gut laugh of this meta shit or this stuff that's saying fuck you to any kind of authority.
Yeah.
And it didn't necessarily motivate them to be activists, but I want to know what it did to them internally, or did it change them, or were they just no, this is a little gem that I get to keep for myself. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think maybe just a little bit of that emotional catharsis. If you are working for a big company and you're doing your 9-to-5 job and you're toeing the line and saying the things that are supposed to be said and pretending to have this perfect life like you're supposed to do, to have the relief of having Fred Allen and Tallulah Bankhead kind of whisper to you over the radio or record or a TV show or whatever and say, it is all bullshit. You're not nuts.
Right. Yeah.
It's all bullshit.
Good call.
But it's,
yeah.
You know, and just make people feel better for a minute.
Yeah. This makes me now, I think there is an album. I want to say there's an album that's almost exclusively Tallulah Bankhead stuff, and I've seen it, and I haven't ever picked it up, and
ooh,
now I kind of want to.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to hunt that down, because I know I've seen something with her name on it exclusively. it's a really good sketch. Now we get to something. I bought an entire album of George Jessel's based solely on the idea that, you know, Billy West talked about him for a long time because he's the inspiration for Zoidberg.
Okay.
So, because he does sort of have this in the back of it, you know, hey, mommy, it's me from the money. And, like, that's a cute bit. I don't care. I listened to his album, and the whole album, I'm just like, I can't listen to this anymore.
Yeah.
I know that he sort of invented the phone bit. Like, good on him because it gave Shelley Berman and Bob Newhart careers, but
yeah,
I don't.
The only thing that I got was like, oh, he's doing a phone call and he sounds a little drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Great. And I was curious because I have heard his name bandied about in relation to the Rat Pack. All the Rat Pack people really liked him because I think he was a nightclub comedian where a lot of the comedians were, you know, vaudeviller theater and transitioned into radio and film and cleaned themselves up. And I think the Rat Pack guys, because they were subversive.
Uh-huh.
Really like the comedians who like never really left the nightclub and they're still hanging around being a little bit, you know, rougher and edgier.
Okay.
So I can see why from that perspective they admired him. Mm-hmm. But this was just like a drunk guy on the phone.
Uh-huh.
Many of that us can just hear that from our relatives. I don't need to go to a comedian for that.
There is this weird thing where now I'm picturing Dean Martin in the audience while George Jessel does his boring shit. Dean Martin drunk off his ass. You're like, that old guy's funny as shit. I love this guy.
Yeah.
Like almost ironically appreciating it, but it's like, no, this is great, guys. Now look, he's going to talk to his mama again.
And then he basically stole that bit and did it better, I
think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, people who are big fans of George Jessel. I'm sure you're out there. The next one, because I love Ed Wynn, I could listen to this for hours. Just so, whoa! Like, just that for 3 fucking minutes and just, like, making fun of sponsors. Oh, is that a sponsor? Which one is it? Oh! Like, I can't remember a word he actually said. It's just that voice is, I can't stop listening.
The voice was very funny. I didn't think any of the, like, bits particularly landed. At one point, he said, isn't this a chewing gum program?
Yes.
And that amused me.
Uh-huh. Because the whole bit's about a sponsor being gasoline and, like, him, like, fucking up the sponsor bit. And then, yeah. Chewing gum? Oh, my God. Again, I could listen to him forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah, he's great. I enjoyed this. I don't think this particular one was amazing. But he is great. Yeah.
I do have an entire album of his that I have not listened to.
Ooh,
again.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have to rip that one and I'll send it to you. See if
awesome.
It's any good. Hopefully. It's gonna be that same fucking voice the whole time. Although when he acted, like he's in a Twilight Zone, like he could tone it down. But he sounds so young here too. To me,
yeah,
he sounds like he's like maybe he's probably 40, but like if he was like in his 20s or 30s, like that he could still, I don't know, just that squeak of his I want to know how he actually spoke, but he definitely toned it down for Twilight Zone.
Yeah,
I can say that much. Because that laugh is fucking dumb. It's a ridiculous dumb laugh.
Oh yeah.
The next one is the Jack Benny one that we talked about earlier, the
yeah.
Hold up.
Which is just like one of the most famous old radio lines.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was really weird after all of these. This, like, you picked them at random. And here is a moment of actual golden comedy from one of the actual stars of the golden age of radio comedy. Like,
yep.
Weird. Why isn't the rest of the album this?
For real. For real.
Yeah.
And it's so late in the album.
Yeah.
It's a relatively, comparatively, it's a quick clip
to
some of these.
Super short.
But we did the bit. We talked about the bit earlier, but the bit is he's held up in your money or your life, and then your money or your life. I'm thinking about it. You can just picture him with his arm on his face.
Yeah, so. And it always gets talked about. I've heard it talked about so much about, and the thing I appreciate about Jack Benny is being aware of where all of the laughs are.
Yes.
So having that pause, so there's that initial laugh when the dime drops that would be a decision for him, and then being able to wait for that laugh to die down, and then say I'm thinking about it and basically double dip on the laughs. And like that, I would sometimes, I think it was only once that I used that exact example, but when I was doing more theater back in Minneapolis and I'd be working with actors, they sometimes felt nervous about being greedy for laughs.
Sure.
And I'm gonna be, it's not greed. Mm-mm. You want to make the audience laugh, mm-hmm. and it's an art. So you have to think about, what are they thinking? Where's the dime going to drop? And if you can get two laughs or three laughs instead of one laugh, be Jack Benny and get
absolutely
two or three laughs.
And everybody's going to love the fuck out of you
yeah.
for it. Believe me. That's a really good lesson. That's a good way to do it. Yeah. I feel like growing up in the 90s, there were not a lot of people left who were necessarily talking about these guys' influences, but definitely Phil Hartman, I remember talking very specifically about loving... He could have played Jack Benny, and I'm sure it's one of the guys he would have wanted to if
he
could have made a movie about it. I'm trying to think. Him and then, weirdly enough, Kelsey Grammer. Kelsey Grammer talked about him as an influence.
And oh, yeah.
I guess I can see it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah. I'm less of a Frasier guy. You know, I feel like I'm too much of a loyalist to News Radio, so now, like, I'm less of a Frasier guy because of News
Radio.
Oh,
well, yeah, because they were kind of going up against each other, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they're both on NBC, and they both, as David Hyde Pierce said, had the same palette, which is true. They have the same wash of brown.
Yeah, the eyebrow, lowbrow.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
That too, yeah. It's but I don't know. It's weird to me to think, because I only think of him as Fraser Crane. I'll never think of him as anything else because he played the damn character for 20 years.
He's kind of become a joke of himself,
uh-huh.
you know, since because he hasn't really landed Mm-mm. anything else. And
yeah.
he's started a lot of sitcoms. And
right.
obviously he's had some more outrageous and to some of us kind of offensive opinions and statements.
Uh-huh.
So now, like on Twitter, like Kelsey Grammer is almost a meme.
Uh-huh.
And making fun of Fraser is almost a meme.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when he was on, I was like, this is great. And I think it is really sharp writing.
Sure.
But I think
sure.
the meme version of Kelsey Grammer has poisoned it a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sorry, we got off on a Kelsey Grammer jag. These next two guys, I have never heard of Smith and Dale. Apologies, nerds.
Neither have I.
But it's Smith and Dale. Apparently just being Smith and Dale. Let's see what the album says. This will help us both. Joe Seltzer, Smith, and Charlie Marx, Dale, met in 1898.
Holy Jesus.
Both were riding bicycles. Were they penny farthings? That's what I need to know. And they collided at the corner of Delancey and Eldridge Streets in Manhattan. They acquired the name Smith and Dale when a sign painter offered them a collection of art cards for a team that had dissolved. What is happening? From that day on, they were Smith and Dale, favorites of theater and vaudeville professionals. The team created several classic sketches, later borrowed by others. Dr. Cronkite and his only living patient, however, has borne the imprint of Smith and Dale since its first performance. Well, thanks for the imprint, Smith and Dale.
Wow.
And whatever that story meant about the sign.
That story was more interesting than the bit to
It
me.
Was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, is a doctor and a patient. Who are these people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. Like, they're doing, like, it's just some old-timey vaudeville jokes.
Absolutely. What, I think it's stool in my blood and what's new with you. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it.
Mostly just disturbing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't need to hear about stool in your blood.
And then we wrap it up with like the lowest energy comedy possible.
But
fine with Laurel and Hardy.
I love them.
Me too, but they're fine, but
Heroes.
This is the lowest energy fucking thing to end an album on.
And it did seem like they had just recorded a audio thing that is a promotion for their European tour.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
So the golden age of comedy ended with some of the most famous comedians to ever live
mm-hmm.
doing a low energy audio promo
yeah.
for a tour in Europe.
Hello, Wally. I'm going to eat an egg. Like, that's the bit. Fucking eats an egg with a shell on. All right.
I mean, and I think their strength on film is even in their shorts that have, or movies that have a lot of verbal jokes,
mm-hmm.
That. Still, it's utterly the physicality, and it was fascinating to hear them have to be forced to describe the physicality when Laurel says to Ollie, like, well, you're wriggling your tie like you do when you get fancy.
Which I enjoyed that.
I would have actually loved the whole thing if it was just an audio description of like, oh no, my pants ripped. I have fallen down the stairs and now my ass is in a pot. Like, if they had actually been describing a big, huge Laurel and Hardy bit, that would have been
now
awesome.
Now I want a bit where it's two old comedians like that who are confined to wheelchairs, and that's the only thing they can do. They're on the radio.
Describe their physical comedy.
Their physical comedy, and then people are just pissing themselves
and
laughing.
Now our act described. A hanky's hanging out of my pants, so it looks like a wiener. Anyway.
This needs to happen. See, we've come up with some very good ideas today.
Yeah, thank you for the pitch session.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. What are your closing thoughts on this, the weirdest compilation in the history of comedy?
Oh, it just reminds me of how great it is to find these kinds of things that are not a complete project, not a complete product.
Mm-hmm.
They're not well thought through, but they are, almost because of that, great, strangely honest
mm-hmm.
samples of what comedy is, and like that it always has its highs and its lows.
It's true,
and sometimes the people who you look at this album and go, which was going to kill? Probably Groucho Marx and Laurel and Hardy. And then they're the ones like, oh, well, this is okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody has off nights.
Yeah. Their best stuff is owned by big companies we can't get the rights from.
Yeah.
You know, like that might be part of it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird, I don't know how the rights issues work, but I think that sometimes was the issue too. Like the best Marx Brothers album is that bootleg that I have on the wall. And that's got like shit that they stole from movies because they could, because it was a bootleg.
Yeah.
That's the best shit you're going to find.
Yeah.
I'm not even that. I'm realizing, like, now we're talking about it. Like, Laurel and Hardy, I know they're films, but, like, have they ever released a comedy album? I don't even know.
Laurel and Hardy?
Yeah, that would be weird, right?
No.
That wouldn't
be
possible.
They were just not verbal. They were only verbal in a little bits and pieces, really.
So.
And often said the exact same things, mm-hmm. short to short. And it's hilarious, and it works. And I love them.
It's very strange to me. This is a very strange moment.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a weird way to end an album.
It is. But it really is. To basically end an album that was released in 1972 that we're listening to in 2018 with a come see our show in Europe.
Uh-huh.
This was probably recorded in 1938.
We're going to be performing for the Chancellor. He's very excited to have us.
At this point, it's like going to be listening to like an old episode of Nerdist where Hardwick's like, come see me at the Meltdown.
Yeah,
like,
right. Oh.
Those things don't exist anymore.
I know. Yeah, you were making me think the same thing because people make that sort of spurious connection where podcasts are the new comedy albums. I don't believe that. But that said, if you were to do a best of, I now wonder like which of these shows, of the fuck around shows especially, would have any value.
Right. And would you hunt for the best moment of like Jordan, Jesse, Go?
Mm-hmm.
Or would you just take a random sampling and it would just be like, who are these guys?
Yes.
What are they talking about?
Right.
Because
any podcast at its worst is bad. So, I mean, like you've got to be careful. Just like any comedian can have a low point. It's just a weird comment. I didn't even look to see if there's a volume 2. I'm afraid, but if I find it, we're talking about it.
This is it. This is the entire golden age of comedy in these two albums.
So sad.
This two-set vinyl collection.
And there are one or two people in there just legit never heard of. That's the weirdest part of it. There's some pretty good caricatures on the cover. I didn't think to look and see who drew this cover. I think it's
on the Discog.
It's Al Kilgore. Al Kilgore.
Great name. Related to Trout? Trout?
Maybe.
Yeah.
He's got a weird, almost kind of Hirschfeld-y. Like, Milton Berle is a little kid on the cover for no reason. there's a lot of stuff going on here that makes just zero sense. It's good. The cover and the back are the exact same art. lazy motherfuckers. Boy. Well, I'm going to tell you, I don't know when this episode's going to come out. I can try and look it up.
No worries.
Do you have anything that's upcoming to promote?
Yeah. As always, people can find me on all social media. Twitter and Instagram is my name. It's at Joseph Scrimshaw. Mm-hmm. And for the last several months and going on into the future, I'm doing a regular comedy variety show with my friend Angela Weber. She is from the nerd band The Double Clicks. She lives here in Los Angeles now.
Oh.
So we do a monthly comedy variety show the last Friday of every month at Geeky Tees and Games in Burbank. And
shit.
It's been a ton of fun. Just great fun. We do some improv stuff where I have people who haven't really played role-playing games play a 10-minute role-playing game, do stand-up. Angela does some music. We do some storytelling. It's great fun.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like an idiot because I love Geeky Tees and I didn't know this was happening. Here's the problem. People promote stuff. I'm never on Facebook except to promote my own shit. Then
understandable.
I'm gone. And oh my God. Well, I'm going to have to come see this.
I will bug you about it.
Yes,
and if people
do.
Are curious, you can go to my website at josephscrimshaw.com and look at the live shows page.
Yeah, this isn't going to come out for a while. I apologize.
I don't care.
Do you have a comedy album coming out? Come on. Do you have another comedy album happening?
I am working on one.
Yay.
We'll see. I'm not ready to announce anything.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, it's just good to know you're working.
Just hold this for a couple years and
it'll be fine. Yeah. I'm just glad you're working on another one. That's good.
Okay. I am. And still doing my podcast Obsessed, too, which if people have not listened to your episode is sincerely one of my favorites. Aww. I really, really like your episode all about Lego.
That was fun.
Insightful and funny and everything.
Yay. Even my dumb answer about the meaning of life. I can't remember what I said, but I feel like it was really bad.
I remember thinking it was good.
Oh, okay.
So we'll go back and listen.
Mm-hmm. I've got a thing that I really, really want to announce too, but again, I don't know when this comes out, but let's just say I'm re-releasing a comedy album from the 60s on Celery Sound Records, which you can find at bit.ly/comedy albums, and it's not going to be out for another few months, so I apologize for that, but keep your eye out. That's coming out. My comedy album's coming out later this year. It's technically my 13th that I put together, but it is my third that is being released to the public.
Nice.
And then eventually on vinyl very soon thereafter. And you know what? I don't promote my other podcast that often, but if you listen to Dan and Jay's Comedy Hour, it's fun. My buddy Dan and I talk about our sketch comedy. We have literally been doing it 25 years as of this year.
Wow.
And by the time this comes out, our Silver Jubilee theme song will be on, which is put together by a guy named Nick Robes, who runs a really great Scooby-Doo podcast called What's With You, Scooby-Doo. Yeah, that's it. I promoted some stuff. Look at me. Oh, and on Instagram, I'm Jason Klamm. My full name, JasonKlamm, and I've been doing this thing called The Professional Blur, where I talk about all my extra work. And check that out, because that's kind of fun. Posting pictures where you can see the back of my neck. Literally, I did that the other day. Well, that's it. Joseph, thank you for coming on again.
Absolutely.
You're absolutely coming back at some point, especially if we find Volume 2.
I can't wait.
Thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klamm. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. You can email us at podcast@comedyonvinyl.com. You can also send snail mail to Stolen Dress Entertainment, P.O. Box 805, Burbank, California, 91503. Subscribe to Comedy on Vinyl on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Comedy on Vinyl, or find everything in one place at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune in to the new Stand Up Records channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast. Visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, watch videos, and imbibe freely of our multimedia content going back 15-plus years.